Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
And I didn't. All right, now we're rolling now. All right, welcome to Whiskey Congress. It's a special Whiskey Congress because we are broadcasting live on Political Storm. So I'd like to say thanks to the guys from Political Storm, guys and gals from Political Storm for setting this up for us.
Let's just jump into it. I do want to thank the guys from Political Storm for reaching out to us. We've done some work for them. You could see a lot of our stuff, whether it's stories or podcast episodes, on Political Storm's site at politicalstorm.com. And it's a really good platform that has a number of different voices, a lot of conservative, some middle of the road, and some liberal. I think we fall into the middle of the road category. And, we always try to be as fair and balanced as possible. But we have our biases. We're human. And we don't try to hide it, but we try to be as honest with ourselves and with each other and with everybody who's listening, just to make sure that we're trying to come at it fair. And sometimes we're wrong and own that when we are, when it gets called on us. But this is the state of affairs that we live in right now. From a political standpoint, things are constantly changing at a very rapid pace. And I think that the one thing that we try to focus on is that you don't have to be stuck on one position. You have to have an open mind and be willing to take in different, hear different sides of different issues, and make an informed decision that maybe changes your mind. And hopefully, we can do that for someone today, maybe we'll change each other's mind one way or another.
Who knows? So last week we talked about the disappearance of Jamal Khashoggi, and we now know, maybe we don't officially know, but we know he's dead. We know he was killed by people in the Saudi embassy consulate in Istanbul, Turkey. And this will come as a surprise to no one who ever listens to us, but I do not care for the way the president chose to speak about this. Now, let me be fair. First of all, if Hillary Clinton was in office, I think she would have chosen better words and done exactly the same thing, which is really nothing. I hate to say it. The United States will do nothing, and I don't even know what they can do.
Well, the situation is, we don't know what has happened. We don't know what happened. The one thing I can say with President Trump, the way he's handling it, because we don't know what happened, what's he supposed to do? And I think there's a lot of information coming from the Turkish government, and you have to take that to a degree with a grain of salt. I mean, I get it that it's a state government telling us, hey, this is what happened, and we've got a video and we've got audio. But listen, there's reason to be leery of what the Turkish government is putting out there. Like, they have an agenda as well. I think we can all agree that something happened to Jamal Khashoggi, and we don't know what. I think we all believe that he's dead, like you said earlier. A story came out today that I heard that the Saudis are saying that he died in a fist fight at the consulate, and his body was given to a Turkish national to dispose of. And they've rounded up 18 people, and people are being questioned and arrested. And the Saudis also sent the U.S. $100 million, and we're not sure what that's for. Okay. In the last week. So there's a lot of questions to this still. There's a lot that we don't know as a public. I think there's a lot our government doesn't know, or at least they're not intimating that they know. And so there is. I'm not exactly what is he? What is Trump supposed to do? And really, what would we want to see him do?
Here's what I would want to see him do. I would want him to say, this occurred in Turkey on a Saudi-owned facility, and it's not an American citizen, so we physically can't do anything. However, this is what we have Interpol for, this is what we have these other organizations for, and we, as Americans, do not tolerate governments murdering... The good news is the volume's working. We are now experiencing technical difficulties or echoing. But yeah, so Sorry. All right, I'm just going to talk how nuts you'd be going at me if I had done that.
No, like, okay, I know, okay, I know. Okay. I'm sorry.
All right, anyway.
Technical difficulties.
So, yeah, I think he should have articulated better, like, what the position is and how we really have no power, but if the Saudi government is engaging in activities like that, that we could sanction them. That's what I would have preferred here. Not, hey, $1.2 billion, we can't mess with that.
Yeah, I mean, his phrasing of what he believes, I mean, his phrasing of, well, we don't know what's going on, we're going to look into it, but, you know, but they are a partner of ours. We I mean, I think we have to acknowledge that. I don't necessarily mind him slow playing it. Let's get a better idea of what's going on. Let's not rush into saying anything. I mean, it's a fragile relationship no matter what, and I don't think we want to look to sever it until we find out what happened, and then once we do, then we take appropriate
right.
And I get what you're saying. Like, you have to maybe a stronger stance to let Saudi to send a message to Saudi Arabia that if you did this, there's going to be a price to pay. He hasn't come out and really and said that in a strong form, and so that's really, I think, what a lot of people are waiting on, want to see. I'm somewhat okay with what he said to this point. I mean, he's just not the guy, he's not an articulate man. He's not worried about perception, you know, to a fault, I think. He's not worried about perception, and so he's going to say what he believes is the most important. And in this particular issue, it's the economic relationship or the financial relationship we have with another country. And I think, you know, the one thing Breitbart was trying to play was, is this really a big deal? People get killed all the time, and we don't, you know, I mean, the media doesn't cover it. I mean, there were the Mexican journalists that got killed and no one covered it, which actually everyone did. Every major newspaper, every major news source, CNN, MSNBC, they all covered the Mexican journalists that were being killed in Mexico. And I think this is an important thing because when journalists, they're the fourth estate, you know, like they're the check on the government to a degree. And so when those people start to go missing and those people start to get killed on government soil, right, which, you know, at a consulate or an embassy, that's right. What that is, then that should be concerning to everyone. I mean, you Breitbart, you're a news organization. Let's flip it. Let's say it was one of your reporters that goes to a consulate somewhere, and they end up. And then, what would you want if this happened when Obama was in office? What would you have wanted him to do? Would you say, oh, well, it's not a big deal that our guy disappeared and got chopped up? It's just this happens all the time. Like, it's not. That's not the cost of doing business, and we can't. This is something that can't be normalized, and I think that's what really, if you're on the conservative side, you got to be careful saying, you know, this isn't that big of a deal. It happens in countries all the time. We should, like, yes, there are other journalists that have died, and maybe it should have been a bigger story, but those stories are still covered. This story is getting covered. Why it's getting more attention? It's because of our relationship with Saudi Arabia,
right?
You know, and who the guy was. I mean, he it's not like he was just. It's not like he was me or you.
Right. He was writing the food column for the
year. Right. I mean, he was a very influential person in media, especially in the Middle Eastern world, with things that he had done in Saudi Arabia and Turkey and other countries. And also just, you know, with him working for the Washington Post, going to school here. I think he had graduated from school here, I think at Indiana or Indiana State. And then he is, I believe, a permanent resident of the United States or something along those lines. But he's a Saudi. He's from Saudi Arabia originally. So
that is correct.
You know, there's a direct connection to him in the United States. There's a direct connection to him and his influence on the information that comes out of Saudi Arabia and the Middle East. And it's important that we have people like him that are able to tell what's going on. And for him to walk into, you know, a consulate and not walk out alive. That should be concerning to everyone, especially if you're in media.
And the fact that the body is gone, I mean, that's straight up mafia shit.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the scary part. What happened to his body? Like,
There's word that there was a bone saw involved, which means they intended to dismember him, if that reporting is true.
It's terrifying. It should be, especially if you're in media. I don't care if you're conservative or liberal. The fact that, you know, someone, if you're in media, I don't care if you're with Breitbart or with NBC or whoever, you know, somebody walks in somewhere that does what you do and they don't come out alive, presumably because of what they do, then that's an issue.
This is so much different than, I mean, everyone remembers the death of Daniel Pearl, who was captured in Afghanistan and murdered live on video. As horrific as that was an enemy combatant. This is potentially a government.
Right.
And it's a government I've expressed many times I'm not a fan of.
Right.
This is a big fucking deal, period.
Right. I mean, and their explanation doesn't quite make sense. I mean, he walked into a consulate, got into a fist fight, accidentally died, and then they gave his body to a Turkish dude.
Right.
I'm not sure how that quite makes sense, but that's the story that they're going with, apparently. And there's some, they are holding people accountable, the Saudi government is. So, I mean,
So my prediction is the way this ends is the Saudi government says, we found the bastards that did it, and we executed them, and we're all good.
Yeah,
that's how I predict this will end, and I will not take that at face value. But it really won't matter what I take at face value, now will it?
Right.
So Elizabeth Warren released her DNA results, and I don't even. This is another one of these things where I don't care. I just don't.
It was. I think it was honestly Elizabeth Warren releasing her DNA results to me. One, it's a waste of time. Two, it's a way to get her. It's a move by her to get herself in the spotlight. Right, it pits her against Donald Trump. She said she had Native American
heritage,
and Donald Trump said he didn't. He makes some statement on Twitter that he'll at a rally that he'll give $1 million to a charity if she can prove it. So she does the 23andMe, and lo and behold, six to ten generations ago, there was a indigenous person of some origin. In her bloodline,
okay,
and it was anywhere from 1 in 64 to 1 in 1,000 or something along those lines, and people on the left, oh look, see, she is Native American, and look at and blah, and she's and all this other stuff, and then you have the action, and then conservatives are just like, that's bullshit, she's as much Native American, and I even said this, she's as much Native American as I am Irish. Right? I mean, like, and I'm pretty sure I can't go to Ireland and claim shit. That would not go well for me, other than unless I showed up with bottles of whiskey and say, hey, we doing this?
We can work this out.
Right, I mean, we can figure something out. But, I think, to me, it's disingenuous, and it goes back, to me, this is more than just the political implications between her and Donald Trump. This goes back even further to where, at Harvard, when she got a job there as a professor, and she was sitting on a board, and they labeled her as their female minority representative. This is our woman of color. Students back in 95 at Harvard were complaining like, hey, there's no diversity. You have no people of color on this board. And they said, oh, well, we've got a woman, and she's a woman of color. Walks in Elizabeth Warren, one of the whitest people that you could see, and they're just like, okay, so who is this, and how is she the woman of color? Oh, she's Native American.
Elizabeth Warren makes me look like Jay-Z.
Right. I mean, and you've legitimately been confused as a Puerto Rican.
I have multiple times.
Or a Mexican,
yeah, all
right? Or a Middle Eastern person, right?
Like that has all happened.
You've got that olive skin of yours.
The olive skin mixed with the Polish kind of gives me a tough-to-identify look.
Gives you a ethnic ambiguous look. But
it does.
The point being with Elizabeth Warren, to me, I think this is, I think it makes her look bad to people that are in the center or to the right. I don't think she gains any political favor in this. I think what it does is anyone who was going to support Elizabeth Warren, they were going to support her with this, whether she did this or not. I don't think she swayed anyone to, like, if she does decide to make a presidential run, I don't think she swayed anyone to her side. And I think that she's given the right ammunition, all right? She's given the conservative side ammunition to use against her. Now, listen, you can debate the amount of, Native American genealogy and all that stuff all you want. But when you look at that report, what she published, right, that came from 23andMe, it says 1 in 64 or 1 in 1,024.
Okay. Right? I didn't see the numbers.
Yeah, and if she decides to run, that's what Trump is gonna throw out there, and that's what her political opponents are gonna throw out there. Like, look, she tells, she went to Harvard and said, I'm a woman of color, and she's about as woman of color as, again, like, I am Irish. And they're gonna perpetrate that as a lie, they're gonna perpetrate that as her, taking, you know, taking someone else's culture and appropriating culture and basically lying to people for her own personal gain and political gain. And they're going to continue with the narrative that the Democrats are racist and they're lying to you and it's all to keep, you know, minorities down. And and it's going to be hard for her to combat that. Like, she's, you know what I mean? Like, they're going to back her into a corner with it. And I along with her record and things like that. And is she going to be able to overcome it? I don't think so. I don't think she was a viable candidate. And I think this hurts her if she decides to run for president in 2020.
I'm guessing she will run. Excuse me. I'm guessing she will seek the nomination. I don't think she'll be one of the favorites. Although, frankly, at this point, I don't know who is. And I do think this is very bad from a Democratic Party perspective, in the sense that you have just given Donald Trump and the Republican Party
more ammunition.
Right. Point. I mean, I don't know how they keep getting away with, you know, and Hillary Clinton this, because Hillary Clinton is fucking irrelevant now. I mean, irrelevant.
As long as she doesn't do anything crazy, like decide to run.
Right, which only if she buys the DNC again.
Who knows? I mean, she's got the money to do it.
A lot of it probably came from Saudi Arabia, which goes back to my original, she wouldn't do anything different than Trump.
Listen, I mean, and the New York Times came out, speaking of Hillary Clinton, and came out and said, listen, Hillary Clinton is a liability for the Democratic Party, and she needs to fade away if she truly wants to see Democrats succeed, you know, in the midterms and, you know, in the presidential election. She herself, she's just so divisive, and she's a buzzword for conservative and people on the right. Like, literally, there are about 7 words that any GOP candidate can say, right, that's not even a full sentence, that will automatically get crowds riled up and get their base, you know, will push their base more in their direction.
Socialism and Hillary Clinton.
Socialism, Hillary Clinton, immigration,
ISIS.
You know, you know what I mean? Like
MS-13.
Exactly. You know what I mean? It's just those random buzzwords, and they can just throw them out there, and people will go nuts over it, right? And now
Elizabeth Warren has joined that.
Right, and Elizabeth Warren is kind of in the mix there. In my personal opinion, I don't think it wins her any points. I think it confuses an issue that isn't really even an issue. I saw articles from the Washington Post, you know, defending what she did and explaining it. And if you use a different test, and if you use a different way of analyzing it, then it comes out that she's still not really that much Native American, but she's got enough in it to say it. So, you know, why are people beating her up over it?
The one reason I find this amusing, though, is, and I don't know if you know this story or not, but when Trump said, like, I'll give $1 million to a charity of your choice to Obama if you produce your college transcripts or something to that effect, and then Bill Maher came out and said, I'll give $5 million to a charity of your choice if you can prove that you are not the child of whatever his mom's name is, and an orangutan, and he put an orangutan up. Trump sued Bill Maher for $5 million for that. It got thrown out.
Right.
But legitimately filed a lawsuit to do that. And of course, Bill Maher brought it onto the show and read it. But now it's on the other foot.
I mean, I guess the other, I mean, whatever. I mean,
it's irrelevant.
You know where I feel about Bill Maher. But I mean, I think it goes to, you know, Trump was a huge person. He was a huge birther. You know, advocate, and wanted to see Obama's birth certificate, and demanded, and, you know, would go on the news circuit and say, I got a guy who's going to drop a big November surprise, and it's going to be that Obama was born in Kenya, and blah, blah, which, again, the biggest thing that got lost for me was that Obama's mother was an American citizen.
Right.
So even if he was born in Kenya, it doesn't really matter. I mean, I think there's a lot that kind of got lost in the wash there, and we don't need to...
Because they want, yeah.
Right, I mean, and we don't need to relitigate it, but... No. So moving on from Elizabeth Warren,
Real quick, just Paul Allen died.
Paul Allen did die.
And very sorry. Sorry to jump. I didn't know he was sick. Apparently, he had been battling cancer for years.
He had, and I read that he wanted to keep it private, and he basically wanted, you know, his business enterprises and his teams to be able to, you know, he didn't want the focus on him. And it is sad. I mean, Paul Allen is a big reason why there's still basketball, the NBA professional basketball, in the Northwest. You know, he bought the Portland Trail Blazers, and there was talks of moving Portland out of Portland to somewhere else, just like what happened with Seattle, moving to Oklahoma City. And he said, nope, I'll buy him and they will stay right here. He also owned the Seattle Seahawks. And there's
actually one of the co-founders of Microsoft.
Right. Yes. One of the co-founders of Microsoft. I mean, which is huge, obviously. But I mean, on the sports side, there's an interesting rule in the NFL that you can't own another sports team outside of the market that you own your NFL team. Right. So, but he got grandfathered in, so he was allowed to own the Seahawks and Portland, but no one else, if let's say we hit the Powerball for $1 billion and then we were able to get another $1 billion. Because you basically need $1.5 billion to buy a sports team, by the way, folks.
Yeah.
So if we did that, then we would have to, if we owned an NFL team, if we wanted to own another sport, whether it was baseball or basketball or hockey or whatever, we couldn't buy the Cleveland Browns and then buy the Buffalo Sabres.
Right. Obviously, the Buffalo is one of the cities that has one owner for two teams, but he's both in that market.
Right. And Buffalo is actually where Donald Trump tried to buy into the NFL.
It is where he tried to buy into the NFL. Right.
And firmly believe that's why he got his panties in a bunch about the NFL. But moving on. But Paul Allen dying is significant. I mean, I think, he was... I think his overall societal impact is a little bit understated because of Bill Gates.
Right. Bill Gates is the face of it.
Yeah, Bill Gates is the face of it, but Paul Allen has as much to do with that company and Microsoft. And, Microsoft is a huge part of our world, even if you're an Apple person.
Right.
Something that you're using is it came from something Microsoft related. And just the cultural impact that the company has had, that he has had, I think our world is really better for. And he's a guy that will be missed. He was quiet, he was understated, but he was a passionate guy about his business and about his sports teams. And I like the fact that he had sports teams that he, Steve Jobs would have never purchased a professional team. That's not how his brain works.
That's a safe bet.
And yet Paul Allen did before it was the hip thing to do. Obviously, he saw the dollar signs, but I think he genuinely enjoyed the teams that he owned, and to me, that matters. I'm a sports guy, and I like it.
Right. No, I hear what you're saying, and I wouldn't argue with you, because it shows being a professional sports team owner is an exclusive club of the kind of money and power. Okay.
It's power. Those guys wield.
Yeah, they do. They pretty much own the city they're in, right? I want a new stadium. I want
very
this.
Big swords. So but, let's not understand okay. it.
And it just, but it's it is the among the most exclusive clubs in the world. Having said that, when someone like him does it, when someone like Terry Pegula, the owner of the Bills and Sabres, does it, they also seem to have an actual genuine connection with the sport. And it's so much more fun to cheer for a team when you believe the owner is passionate about winning, not just about making money.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. I mean, there's so much more we could talk about politically, but we need, the strength of our show is we got a black guy and a white guy who talk about stuff involving race and drink whiskey and be honest and whatever.
And we don't get into physical confrontations.
We do not get into physical confrontations over it. So everyone, I think, by now has seen the video of the white girl blocking the black guy getting into his apartment. I'm so sure you've seen it that I don't need... this was the weirdest of the nature of these things. Right? We've had stories where, a black girl is selling bottles of water and a white lady calls the cops and all that crazy shit that's gone on we've all talked about. But this one is the most bizarre one to me, because this woman literally is like playing defense in an elevator. And what the fuck was she thinking?
Jim, it was bizarre. It really was bizarre. Just her mannerisms. And, she follows a guy to his apartment. He's at one point, he shows her she wants to see his key fob. Right. So he shows her, and then she falls into his apartment. What apartment do you go? What floor? She follows him all the way to his apartment. He puts a key in the door. He goes into the apartment, and then she still calls the police, and they show up at the door. And then he has to prove to the police that he lives there, which that's kind of the more absurd aspect of this whole thing, is after going through all that, you still have to deal with the police. And fortunately, nothing happened of it. It was just a moment. But
now she got fired.
Well, what I mean to him.
Oh, good, right.
But, yeah, she did get fired. I think that, I mean, I would fire. I'm like, God, you are ridiculous. Now, what I can say is I've been in that situation. That happened to me in Chicago. You know, I was subletting a condo in the South Loop downtown, and I had been there for 3 months, and a guy stopped me, wouldn't let me in. And I said, I'm sorry, I live here. I've been here for 3 months. And, you know, almost a very similar interaction. You know, what unit do you live in? And I'm like, I don't have to tell you, man. I had my book bag. You know, I had my constitutional...
What kind of a moron tries to stop you?
Well, I mean, that's a great question. But, I mean, I had my constitutional law book, which is a big, thick... I mean, obviously, I mean, it looks like a giant dictionary, you know, red with the black and the gold. And I'm just like, listen, man, I just, I'm coming from the library. I'm going to school. I want to go to my apartment. I live here. You know, we didn't have key fobs. We just had keys. And I said, I'm going up to my apartment. You know, and he kind of followed me and, you know, says all these things. Like, we've had break-ins and we've had this. And how do I know that you live here? I was like, I have a key to my apartment. I'm going up to apartment 310A. And that I don't know what else to tell you. I can't. Like, you need to get
this
over
guy. Was this guy anyone of authority in the apartment complex?
No, he was not. He's just a resident. Just a resident who lived there.
And wasn't used to seeing black guys.
And I don't... I obviously, that seemed to have been an issue for him. He called the police, and the police came, and I had to prove that I lived there. I showed him my license. I had to, you know, I had my bills to my name. So I had to go and do this whole dance with them. Now, the reason the ID didn't help me is because my ID was still from Ohio.
Right.
And so, like, I had to find a bill with my name on it, which I was able to do, that showed the address. And then they were fine. And the police were very, very respectable. This is Chicago. And the police were fine. They're just like, all right, sorry about the whole disturbance. And but this is back in the early 2000s. So I had a Sanyo flip phone with no video.
Right.
The idea of even recording it never even popped into my mind. I do miss that phone, though, because the battery never died on it. But this happens, and I think my biggest take, the one thing that I want to throw out there is that things like this have been going on since the end of slavery, right? I mean, and not to be overdramatic, but, I mean, they've been going on for the last 30 years. This isn't new. People are saying, oh, this is because of Donald Trump. This is not because of Trump, right? Trump isn't the cause. Trump is the system. People have had these thoughts for the last 30 years, right, that black people are criminals and that black people are dangerous and we don't want black people around us and we don't want Mexicans and we don't want immigrants. That shit is not new, right? Like, stop blaming Trump for this. Like, and you could say, oh, well, he's fanning the flame. Listen, it's been going on. The only thing is now is that we've got better technology and we can capture it and we can show it and say, look, I'm not lying. I'm not crazy. She is.
Right.
That's a her problem. It's not a me problem, right? And it happens. It happens so. I think it happens more than people want to acknowledge, right? That it gets to a point where it does fall on deaf ears, right? And especially if you don't have a video and you don't have proof. So when that happened to me back in 2002 or 2000 or 2003 or 4 or whenever it was, I didn't say anything to anybody. I was annoyed. I was pissed. Right. I might have told somebody that I went to school with, but then I dropped it. That was it. You know, I mean, there wasn't, at the time, the only social media was MySpace, and MySpace was just for music and girls in scantily clad clothes.
Right.
But it's been going on for a long time. It's not new, and it's not going to change. No, even if, I mean, it was going on when Obama was president. It's going to go on when Trump is not president, whether he gets reelected or not. And it's the reality of the world that we live in. And I think this idea that it's Trump's fault and he's the reason, I think it's a deeper issue. Now, there is one caveat to this. White people aren't the only people who call the police on innocent black people. Black people do this shit all the time, right? Like, there are black people, like, you go into a predominantly black neighborhood, there are black people, whether they have feuds with neighbors or they see something suspicious because maybe they have a neighborhood, maybe they have a crime problem with thefts or gangs or drugs or whatever. It happens all the time in black neighborhoods, too. The difference is, how often do the police show up, and what do they do when they get there? That may be a little bit different than what happens in these scenarios, in these predominantly white, you know, condos or you know, downtown Chicago or St. Louis or wherever these things happen. But, I mean, it's not exclusive to white people calling the police on black people. It's people in general calling the police on random black people.
So let me first say, I agree with you. This is not a Donald Trump thing. I don't even, he is irrelevant to this conversation. Her getting fired for doing it, I kind of have mixed feelings about. Because
I don't.
Okay, I don't blame you. I'm not. The only reason I have mixed feelings about it is I think about what we do, right? We get on Facebook Live on Political Storm, and I say things that I'm sure piss people off. I get tweets and emails and comments.
You and me both.
Assuring me of that. Now, I don't do overtly racist things or whatever, but you could take something out of context that I say on the show and make me sound like, again, my overall feeling is fuck her. She was doing something that was completely inappropriate on so many levels, and getting called out for being a racist does not bother me at all. And the fact that it cost her her job.
And part of it was what her job is.
I don't even know.
She worked for a real estate company.
Oh!
Right? I mean, I think she worked for... It was a real estate... I don't know if it was a property management company or she sold real estate or whatever it was, but the thing is, in this day and age, with social media, with the technology, with so many cameras out there, the spotlight's always on you, right?
Right.
You don't have to be rich and famous and have paparazzi following you. The spotlight's always on you. So
if you do something disgusting enough, you're going to get caught and get to you. Yeah, okay, I mean, I can live with that.
You know, the idea that, well, that's not fair. I mean, listen, you know how it was really easy for her to avoid that?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, it was really easy.
It was really crazy that it happened.
Right.
Like, what? Just... All right, this is going to be something that can be fired, but what woman is dumb enough to try to physically confront a man with, you know, body English?
Well, I mean, I think...
She was running a risk of getting...
It happens all the time. People...
Yeah, you're right. You know what?
It happens...
I'm now thinking about an incident that occurred with me and a friend of a friend.
Right, it happens all the time.
You're right.
I mean, whether it's a white woman or a woman or a smaller guy... Like, people don't take that into account, and that's actually kind of good, right? Like, they're anticipating not getting throat punched.
Yeah, okay.
Right? I mean, and so that's kind of a decent indicator of civil society, I guess. You know, but on the flip side, it's just like you...
Look at you being Mr. Silver Lining. I'm
impressed. But think about this. You're bold enough to go to a person... Like, someone's bold enough to come to me. I'm a larger guy. You know, I'm a muscular guy. I've been told I have a bit of a scowl. So people feel that they can come to me and say whatever random off-the-wall thing that they can say, right? But where it gets confusing is you don't want me in your building because you think I'm dangerous because I could be a robber or a rapist, so you're going to confront me and tell me that I shouldn't be here. But, you know, so there's a fear, but there is no fear. Right, and so that's the question is, all of a sudden, do you just say, well, now I'm going to be brave, and whatever happens, happens, and I'll go down a hero, or is it, do you really have a fear, or are you just being an asshole?
So I was watching this on the news in New Jersey on my project, in a really cool place. It's the oldest restaurant in New Jersey.
Is that your spot?
It's the closest place to my hotel. Right. But anyway, it's cool. I mean, it's established 1742. It's called the Cranberry Inn. And the bartender, it was basically me at the bar, and the news was on, the sound was up. The bartender saw that and went something like, what the fuck is wrong with people, or something to that effect. And I was curious. You know, white guy, I'd guess low 30s, and it made me feel good to see that he was outraged in the presence of no one else but me. Like, if he would have said anything other than, what the fuck is wrong with this person, I would have been disheartened by it.
So, what's interesting about this is I received a text 2 or 3 days ago from a friend, acquaintance I knew in college.
Okay.
Right, that I talked to. We didn't play ball together. I think we had a couple classes together, and we partied together and hung out. And we talked maybe once a year, right? He sent me a text. I think it was like Thursday or Friday, and said, hey man, how are things, all that stuff. And I said, oh, I'm good. I'm, you know, like working like crazy, running around, you know. And he's like, man, I just saw this crazy video on Facebook with this woman calling the police on this guy, and it just made me think about you because, you know, I worry with some of the things that I've seen in the media that, you know, someone's going to approach you and it's going to escalate. And it really irks me when these sort of things happen, and it makes me think about you. And I think what all he was saying was, I think he was acknowledging that that situation could have really gone poorly for that guy, right? Like, if he pushes past her, he goes to his apartment, the police come, and she says, he assaulted me and he did X, Y, and Z, whatever. Maybe she makes something up or she exaggerates what happened. The police come and they're on high alert or whatever, and maybe she claims that he breaks into it, whatever. What,
right. Like that's, that could, that's why he's so smart for breaking out the phone.
Right. I mean, can and now that's, prove. Right.
That, yeah.
And so, but I think my you know, my college friend is just like, hey, man, I just wanted to check and make sure everything was good. And I appreciated it, but it what it did was it signified, and listen, he and I are staunch conservative. He's been in the banking world for a long time. He's a guy, he makes a lot more money than I do. You know, he lives in a very affluent part of Massachusetts. You know, drives a Range Rover and does the, you know, that whole thing. Okay. But I think his sensitivity to that in his relationship with me, I thought it was just interesting because of, you know, you think about where he is politically, but he still has some attachment to our relationship, right? Right. And I think that sometimes that gets lost because the biggest thing right now that's happening on the political front with the debates and the conversations on social media and on, you know, podcasts like ours and on shows that you see on Fox and NBC is that the most attention is given to the loudest voices. But those voices are a small percentage of our overall population. And in reality, as a whole, as a country, I think we have a lot more in common. There's a lot more that we actually agree on than you would ever be able to process and pull from what you see on the news, what you see on social media, what you see and what you hear that's reported and that's put out there. Right, I mean, because we pay so much attention to the people who can garner the loudest voices, whether it's the Washington Post or whether it's Fox News or whether it's the president or whether it's someone in Congress or the Senate, right? Like, those people, allegedly, they speak for the people, but in reality, what we know is that they actually don't.
They benefit a lot from us remaining divided.
Right.
If we step back and said...
There is a financial incentive for multimedia corporations or, you know, upstart podcasts or upstart YouTube shows for their to create division, right? Because people will entrench themselves in these sort of in these political issues, right? And especially online in that in the online format, whether it's Facebook or whether it's YouTube or what have you,
where there's a level of anonymity, right?
And what it does, it keeps people coming back and people get addicted to it like a drug. But in reality, in your day-to-day, right, like how many people do you work with where you even know their political stance, right? But you work with them every day, and you have, if you're not talking politics, if you're not talking politics and sports, then you get along with people A-okay. But you bring in politics and or sports, and all of a sudden things go really sideways really quickly. And I think we need to step back. Everybody needs to step back and recognize and realize that as humans, we are all connected and we all have more in common than we are led to believe by the media.
I agree. I kind of want to go back to talking about the Cranberry Inn, though, because that led to another event. And that was, so I'm sitting there having my dinner and, you know, having a drink or two. And eventually the show The Conners came on.
Yeah.
And so I watched the first episode of The Conners.
Which formerly was Roseanne.
Roseanne, right. And it started off with, they're basically 3 months after her funeral, and they're, you know, trying to put things back together as a family.
Spoiler alert.
Well, fuck it. It's been on. If you don't know this, then. So in the show, they think she died of a heart attack, then they find out she overdosed on opiates, and turns out she was pill swapping and a bunch of stuff. And it got a lot of negative feedback and some positive feedback. Actually, I actually watched the original Roseanne show a lot more than you would think, because when I was in graduate school, it was one of the few channels at my no cable.
Sense. Listen, I think even my family watched Roseanne back then. But listen, back in the night when that show was popular, we didn't have nearly as many options on TV. You know, you didn't have 24-hour news cycles like this. Things weren't as divided as they are right now. So, you know, whether you were black, white, or whatever, you watched Roseanne. Whether you were black, white, or whatever, you watched The Cosby Show. Whether you were black, white, or whatever, you watched Martin. Like, it's not, that's not actually out there.
I didn't watch it when it was on, I watched it in syndication in the evenings. But anyway, I know the show. And the nature of the show was basically the same. Now, it's not really up my alley. I'm not going to continue watching it because it's such a, you know, whatever. But it was, when Roseanne got fired, I contended, and I contend even more to this day, that she did not get fired because of being pro-Trump, or she got fired because she pissed off her senior management by causing a firestorm with a stupid tweet.
Yes.
And she actually went on Rogan's podcast, and it was released just before the show aired, and she talked, she made a comment about how they're trying to kill her with opioids. So she knew what happened to her character. She even said she had some spies there, but she couldn't get into that. But she also talked about her history of mental problems, and she has had a ton. I mean, she has had serious health issues. She had a traumatic brain injury as a young person. She's been in mental hospitals. And she is, by all reports, an absolute fucking nightmare to work with. And I think when she gave her management an excuse to get rid of her, they took it. And back to your point about us being divided by whatever, you know, the people on the right typically said, she got fired for supporting Trump. No, she got fired because she's a very difficult person to work for. They gave her an excuse. And one of the things she also said was, she was told when they came on the show, she was never signed anything, but she was told, don't tweet. Your tweets have gotten you in trouble before. Just don't do it. And then she tried to explain that the tweet she sent out had nothing to do with race and was actually a comment about the Iran deal.
Whoa, what?
She said that the... So her tweet was something...
How? I can get that she's... I'll give her a pass on the race thing, and she was just trying to make a comment, right? And she was criticizing Valerie Jarrett, and maybe... I get the connection. I get it, but... Again, listen, she... Like, Roseanne is not a rookie.
No, right? She's not. She's
been around, yeah. and she has, you know, voiced her opinion about politics, so she understands where the climate and kind of the landscape. So, okay, fine. Now, this is what I will say. Initially, I had no problem with the fact that she was fired and said, hey, listen, you say dumb shit on the internet or whatever, and you're a star and you put it out there, your company doesn't like it, you get fired, good. But what I will say is, hindsight being 2020, I think ABC overreacted. I think I overreacted. I think a lot of people overreacted to this. I think a better move probably, just listen, if you want the show to be successful, I think you give her a strong reprimand. You tell her, we told you not to tweet. Don't tweet. We're going to fine you. You know, we're going to, you know, whatever. We're going
right.
to, you know, I mean, I'm sure there's some sort of clause in her contract or something like that where they could fine her some ridiculous amount, $25,000, $50,000, fine her a show salary, something like
$25,000 is nothing to Roseanne.
I get it. But still, I mean, you know, something that'll hit her in the pockets. Right. And then, you bring her back and you make her do something she doesn't want to do, something along those lines. Just because I think if it was truly because she just sucked to work with and they needed to get her out because it just, like, maybe the on-screen was good, but everything leading to that was not worth it, I'll take that and I'll accept it, right? But if it was literally just like, oh, this tweet's so offensive and we're getting all sorts of backlash and we can't deal with it, which I find hard to believe at ABC, all things considered... Then to me, that's not okay. But based off of what you said, right, and knowing that she can be difficult to work with, then I'm not gonna, if that's the reason why, then I mean, it happens.
It happens all the time.
Right. I mean, it happens all the time, and not just to people on
multiple,
TV.
Multiple things in my, like, right. They wanted to get rid of you. You gave them an excuse. They took it. I can think of, in my professional career, I know it's happened to multiple people. I've watched it happen.
I've seen the same thing.
And
I've seen the same thing. Like, it's just like, hey, we told you to do this, and you were supposed to do it. You didn't do it on time. They didn't fire you because you didn't do this one thing on time. They fired you because you suck at your job.
Right.
Right. And they were looking for a reason to fire you. Right. I mean, it's just like maybe the end result was great, but everything leading up to it was a shit show, and it wasn't worth it. And they figured, maybe we can still make this thing work without her. And I think ABC, that's what their thought process is. Maybe we can make it work without her. Maybe we can't. There's a million other scripts and shows that we have other that we can throw in the time slot. We were hoping that this is going to be successful. But they gambled with working with Roseanne again because Again,
they thought they would make money off of it.
Right. And maybe they will. Maybe so what will probably happen, they probably won't make as much. The ratings may dip. But it'll probably still be enough to where they can keep her, you know, they can keep the show on. That's your phone, buddy.
This is my phone, but you can't get mad at me because you...
Right. So, all that being said, you know what Roseanne actually probably needs?
Okay, I'm curious where you're going with this.
Roseanne would probably have benefited a long time ago from cannabis.
Actually, she is an occasional user of it and says it helps her.
Really?
She actually talked about it on Rogan's podcast.
Good for her. Good for her.
She actually said she
after she decided to punt on Ambien, she switched over to cannabis.
That is exactly what she said, pretty much.
Oh, wow. Look at you go.
On Rogan's podcast, she said basically that Ambien was a disaster. Ambien combined with alcohol is a disaster. I have personal stories about that in my family.
I have my best friend who said you look like Seth Rogen, or you sounded like Seth Rogen.
Right. He was shocked when he met me because I didn't look like Seth Rogen. I have no idea.
That was when we were at Brown Stadium. It was great. I actually just teased him about it not too long ago. He apologized.
Thanks for reminding me.
He apologized.
It's okay.
He said, one, he had had a couple too many whiskeys, and two, he just assumed since you and I were close friends, we were all in a circle of trust, basically, and he could say whatever he wanted. And so he opens with, you look nothing like I thought. I thought you looked like Seth Rogen. And you said, you mean Joe Rogan? He's like, no, Seth Rogen. Big goofy guy with curly hair and glasses. And the look on your face was, oh, that's awful.
And I'm here for your charity event, by the way.
Oh, it was great. All that being said, the reason why I brought it up was Canada legalized the weed.
Yes, they did.
The cannabis. Don't say marijuana.
I won't say marijuana. I don't want to get yelled at again.
Because you're racist.
Because I'm racist for saying marijuana. Yeah, they did. And they not only legalized cannabis. See, almost did it again. They are going to start rolling back, you know, criminal charges from the past where people who possess 30 grams or less have, you know, faced legal hardships. I gotta say something funny. When I read that, I read 30 grams as 30 ounces. Ooh. And I remember having a conversation with, I want to say it was our friend out in Las Vegas, about how much an ounce was and how long an ounce was. And I had 30. I'm like, that's a fucking year supply for a stoner. Snoop Dogg. And then, 30 grams. Okay.
Do the math.
Yeah.
Do the math, engineer guy.
The metric system usually didn't trip me up. But anyway. I think this, again, I've used the expression big fucking deal multiple times today, but this is a big deal. It really is.
Yeah. It's a big deal. Obviously for everyone in Canada that's a cannabis advocate. Yep. But it signals that there can be a pathway for the United States to figure it out. Listen, I'm not a huge stoner. If you listen to the show, you know that I have, you know, I use cannabis to help me sleep at night. CBD oil and things like that,
right,
for inflammation and working out and all that other stuff. I just don't sit around all day smoking pot and getting high and contemplating things like, you know, have I ever eaten an egg from a chicken that I've also eaten?
That is the most dangerous side effects of cannabis, in my opinion, is the stupid shit you have to hear a stoner talk about.
So the funny thing about that is, like, someone actually brought that up to me, and they weren't high. But it was more of a powerlifter joke because I'm a competitive powerlifter. And someone brought it up. Like, hey, do you think that you have ever consumed an egg from a chicken that you've eaten, right? Like, you eat eggs in the morning for breakfast and you eat chicken breast. Do you think you've ever done that? And how does it make you feel? And I'm like, I don't know.
Well, so what was this person's point? Were they like a vegan or something trying to get in your head?
Just random lifter dude.
He wasn't high because I'm going with he was high. That's a stoner question.
We're in the gym. We're in the gym.
You can get high in the gym. Anyway.
But besides that, I think, one, it's a big deal because the United States is so reluctant to legalize weed on a federal level.
Right.
And there's multiple reasons why, right? There's money reasons. There's just belief. There's... a lot of it is political and trying to figure out, like, how is this going to affect my campaign? I think there are a number of senators, congressmen, political people at higher that are probably neutral on it, don't care one way or another, but they don't know how it'll play from a vote standpoint. So they want to stay away from it. They won't come out against it. They won't come out for it, but they won't deal with it. Right. There's a few people. You have your Jeff Sessions of the world who staunchly are against it.
Right.
Because of their evangelical preconceived notions of whatever, who will just, that's just their stance. And maybe it's based on race, or maybe, you know, maybe it's reefer madness. Who knows? But in reality, what Canada did was said, here, United States, here's a path. Take the path.
Right. I disagree that they're giving the U.S. I think the U.S. should take it that way.
Canada did it. But what I'm saying is that
the result of their actions. I'm sorry.
Right. Canada didn't do it to inspire the United States. Okay.
I misunderstood what you're saying.
Yeah. Canada did it because it's the right thing to do for them and their constituents and the people who live in Canada. But the reality is that they gave the United States a pathway. Just U.S. And honestly, I don't. If Trump does it, listen. Where things that you can give credit to Donald Trump, defeating ISIS and beating them back.
Yes.
Right? I mean, they're still there, but they're not nearly the same threat that they were 3 years ago. Right?
I believe you're correct, though. Frankly, I wonder how much of it is just that we don't hear it.
I fully agree, but I mean, I think if something happened, we would hear it because there are those people that are, there are literally people in the media who want to destroy Donald Trump and this administration and this presidency. So if something happens that they feel that they can, we're going to hear it. So I think that him and Mattis and the whole gang have done a good job with, you know, containing ISIS to a point to where they're not nearly as relevant as they were 3 years ago.
Okay. Right?
Now, that being said, I'm not in the military. I don't have intelligence information. Maybe they're running rampant and wild and you're right. We're just not killing people. Or, I'm sorry.
We're not hearing it.
But based on the information that I have from my resources, which are limited on this sort of thing, it seems like they've beaten them back. So I want to give them credit for that.
On a daily basis, right?
Right.
Okay.
The tax plan. I'll give them credit for it. It's not great.
I won't.
But there's been some benefit to it. I mean, stock market's great, but the stock market is different from the economy, which is one of the biggest things that I don't understand. People who are very smart, and obviously maybe that they have a reason to say this, but the stock market is different from the economy. Right? Like, yes, stocks are booming, but how many people, what's the percentage of people in this country that actually own stock?
Right.
And who own enough stock to where the stock market being where it is actually beneficial to them. Right? Because there's a difference between if you have $2,000 in the stock market.
Right.
And $200,000 in the stock market. There is a big difference between those people.
There's that, and the people that really benefit have $200 million
in the stock market. Right, exactly. And so, like, those things are completely different, right? And, I mean, like, what about wages, right? Where are wages at? Now, listen.
Different discussion, right?
Right, it's a different discussion, but again, it still matters, and the economy is bigger than the stock market.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so, but Trump and his administration, whether it's Sarah Huckabee Sanders or anyone that is a surrogate of Trump, will talk to you about how well the stock market is doing, and they literally conflate the stock market and the economy, which I think is a disservice to everyone because that's not true, and you have to do a deeper dive in this.
What I love telling people is, if you want to give Trump credit for the stock market, that's great, as long as you give Obama credit for it doubling under his 8 years, because it did.
And it did. I
told that to a friend, and he said, that's fake news. I'm like, no, it's a completely viable fact. I can show you what it was in November of 2008 and what it was at January 2016.
No, listen, Obama did have questions about GDP growth, getting to 3% and 4% and all, and for good reasons. And then, but, I mean, consumer confidence did go up, right, which is the thing that, again, directly impacted the stock market.
Yes.
Right? But there are certain things that we still have to contend with, whether it's wage stagnation, inflation, all those sort of things sort of impact the economy. The economy is bigger than the stock market. But the tax plan did help boost the stock market, which helped part of the economy, which that's a good thing. And I'm not gonna beat him over the head over for it. I mean, that's something I'll give him credit for.
Okay.
Right? And one of the other things that we can begin to talk about giving him credit for is that he's willing to have the conversation about cannabis legalization and criminal justice reform. Now,
I haven't heard that.
But I would give him credit if I do.
Okay.
I have and I've seen it. Now, the caveat or the asterisk or whatever is, what's interesting is that a lot of this comes right before elections.
Right.
We got the midterm elections coming up in 2 weeks, or two and a half, 3 weeks. And all of a sudden, I saw something in the news where the government is taking comments on, you know, rescheduling marijuana or descheduling it or trying to figure out what they should do with it. But they figure that they need to do something. The question is, what do they need to do? So they're taking comments on it from various, you know, political, corporate, all that other thing. Right? That's good. But it's happening a month before the election. I don't think that that's
a coincidence, right?
I don't think that's a coincidence, right? The fact that the president is taking visits from Kim Kardashian and Kanye West and talking about criminal justice reform and people on the right and they're talking about criminal justice reform, that's good. I want to give him credit for that. Now, the only thing is, we haven't seen any reform. We haven't seen any bills proposed. We haven't seen anything come of this. They're talking about it. It's in the media and they're putting it out there. And it's interesting that it's happening a month or two or three before the midterm elections, right? And knowing that right after the midterm elections are November 6th or 7th or whenever that is, and as soon as they're over, as soon as the ballots are in and they're counted and we know who's won and we know who's lost, guess what? 2020 kicks off. And then now we're talking about, you know, who's going to be president. And we've got more, you know, Senate and congressional and all that other things. So part of it is, are they just using these topics and these issues as fodder for, you know, campaign fights? Or are they serious about actually? Because here's the deal. Listen, if Donald Trump legalizes weed and his administration says, all right, we're going to deschedule weed, we're going to look at people who've been arrested for who have convictions for that are marijuana, cannabis, weed related, and you know, from a federal standpoint, we're going to roll those back, we're going to let those people out, we're going to put programs in place, I can't not give him credit for that. I can't sit there and scream that he's a racist and blah blah blah. And if his motivations are strictly political,
that's fine.
Fine.
People do things political motivations all the time. Two questions for you: do you think Jeff Sessions is still Attorney General a month after the?
Great question. Part of me thinks no, but part of me thinks that Jeff Sessions is so just dead set on making sure that his, you know, crime and punishment and rule of law and law enforcement and police, he's so dead set on his agenda that I think that Trump is going to have to force Jeff Sessions out. I've heard, and I've got a good friend that works for the Department of Justice, and he says it's a bad place right now. Morale is very low. People are very frustrated with leadership, Jeff Sessions.
All right.
Because there are certain things that are happening where, I mean, one of the things is the Affordable Care Act and healthcare, where that was taken to court and the Department of Justice didn't defend the federal government's stance on this particular issue, right? Now that's, and the reason why they did it was strictly political. Right, like the Department of Justice, their job is defending the government stance and whatever. But because Trump's agenda is different, and because you know Jeff Sessions is along those lines and probably believes that whatever he believes about the Affordable Care Act, they didn't step up and defend the position because it came from Obama or what have you, and they basically didn't show up, right, to defend a position that came down from the office. That's something that impacted people who work within the Department of Justice saying, like, what the hell are we doing? What are we here for? You know, some of the things that they're doing with civil rights where they've rolled back and they're not holding certain, you know, police forces to the fire, whether it's Baltimore, whether it's Chicago, Cleveland, you know, like St. Louis, Ferguson, whatever, and they've gone back and they've said, well, you know, we know the previous administration said that you were supposed to do X, Y, and Z, but ultimately we don't give a shit. Keep doing what you're doing. Law and order, you know, thin blue line. We support you and fine. And listen, good that you support the police. That's all good, well, and great. But you've had multiple examples of where some of these police forces are out of control. I mean, we saw an entire unit in Baltimore that was operating like organized crime. Right, they were setting people up. They were selling drugs. They were planting weapons. They were taking money. I mean, it was like an episode of the Shield, a season of the Shield, or The Wire, or what have you. And so clearly there's some things that need to happen there to kind of get these police forces in check and clean them up. And Jeff Sessions is saying, nope. Everything, business as usual, you're good to go.
So
I don't think he's going anywhere.
Okay.
That's what that means. I don't think he's going anywhere. I think
Trump will force him out.
I don't think he will.
Okay.
I think Trump will continue to antagonize him because, listen.
Can you imagine working for a guy who treated you the way Trump has treated Sessions?
No. And some of this is just, I mean, I guess.
And fuck Jeff Sessions. You know, I can't stand the guy.
Part of me with Jeff Sessions, like, I would be like, fuck you. I'm out. You know, I'm out. You're like, you're not going to talk to me that way. You're not going to treat me this way. You're putting me out in the media. I mean, I think
I'm going to go write a book.
But, I mean, listen, I mean, I guess, on the flip side, Jeff Sessions is, I'm sticking to my guns.
Right.
And I'm sticking to my guns, which means I want, I want the police to continue to behave like they're behaving. I don't want weed legal. I don't want, you know, people crossing the border. I don't want this. I don't want that. And I'm the only person who's going to make sure all that happens. So I'm going to stay here and I'll deal with Trump. So, I mean, depending on how you look at him and him standing by his stance, that'll ultimately dictate kind of
where you
come out on Jeff Sessions, but I don't think he's going anywhere.
Okay.
Unless Trump finally just says, you know what, Jeff, I'm tired of you. I need somebody else. But this is what I'll say about Jeff Sessions. I think Trump is Trump is open to the idea of legalizing weed to piss off Jeff Sessions.
I don't know why he hasn't done that. I think Trump clearly wants Jeff Sessions gone.
Trump can't just legalize weed.
Well, I know, I understand that.
You know what I mean? But
I don't understand why he's more vocal about it. Like, you know,
he's said some things in the media that I'm sure have rankled Jeff Sessions' ire. In regards to weed specifically. Okay. In regards to cannabis and weed and legalization and things like that. But I also think that Trump is smart. You've got midterm elections now.
Right.
You've got an election in 2020. And so I think he's slow playing it because you need it as an issue to kind of anybody that's on the fence that may be open to marijuana but is a conservative, right?
Like, you just said marijuana.
I'm black, so I'm
racist. Oh, shit.
So if you have like a libertarian, right? Libertarians are like, there's a lot of libertarians that are all about weed, right?
Right.
And so they're just like, listen, just let me do my own thing. And if my own thing is smoking weed, then let me smoke weed. So I think the thought process is, if we do this, then we may lose the political bump that we may get when we need it around election time. There's two more elections coming up that are really important to us. 2018 midterms and 2020. So maybe, realistically, if I had to guess, we probably won't see any sort of movement on this. If we see any movement, it'll be after 2020, but I'm not convinced that we see anything at all.
Well, it'll be interesting to me because what a legislation on cannabis really impacts how many young people come to the polls. And typically...
Maybe.
Or old people, listen, to stop it.
Young people suck. I'm not worried about old people to stop it. What I'm worried about, old people suck. Young people suck at coming to vote. They don't show up. You know, I don't care what you're seeing on Facebook. I don't care what your polls are saying. Young people for the last 100 damn years.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't
do not vote. Doesn't matter who the president is.
I think it's like
is.
30%. It's less than 30%. I think 30% of the total populace votes.
Right.
And young people are way worse than that. And when I say young people, I'm talking 25 and younger.
Right. I mean, and for something like the, I mean, it, now we'll see. Now it also varies from state to state. A state like Florida, you may see an influx of young people vote because of Parkland. Like, those kids still,
right,
still carry a fair amount of cachet there, and it makes sense because of what happened there. And so those kids from Parkland, I guarantee you, will be out on the trail, and they will be pushing people, young people like them, you know, and some of them, in some instances, older than them. You know, I mean, because some of those kids are 17 years old, 16 years old.
They can't vote.
But they'll say, hey, we can't vote, so we need you to be our voice, 18-year-old, 19-year-old, 20-year-old.
Right.
You can, so you need to get out there. So a state like Florida, you may see an influx of voters. The other things that may impact Florida are you have a number of people from Puerto Rico that are in that state. And how do Puerto Ricans view Trump and his administration after what happened to their home and what happened in his reaction? I don't know. I mean,
that's a big deal. I think.
I've heard a number of Puerto Rican people who are not thrilled about the way that Trump handled it, and I don't care what you think, how you think he handled it. If you live in Ohio and you think Trump did a great job, well, it doesn't actually matter because the people who actually live in Puerto Rico who had to leave their home and are now in Florida, they have a different opinion. You know, and I mean, so you have those people, right? And their family members that are all throughout the country, how do they think about Trump and what do they think? And that's not something that they're going to forget about because of Kavanaugh or because of some November surprise. Like, I mean, those people are, they have their family, like that's their family. That's, in some instances, that's their life. And it will impact how they vote. So there, I think for this, like all elections, it will come down to specific states and specific places. But Florida is a swing state. And there's a lot going on in Florida that say Florida may go blue. In the midterms here. And it may go blue in 2020 as well because people aren't going to let those things go.
One thing that really impacted the 2016 election was the lack of turnout by black voters and minority voters,
yep,
because Hillary Clinton is a really easy person not to like.
Yep.
And she was, in my opinion, that campaign just assumed that the black vote
they did a shitty job on a lot of levels with a lot of different groups, especially minority groups and blacks, and they got called out by it by, you know, the up and coming leaders in kind of like the world of black politics, which another reason why she should not run, right?
Right. Like if she even gets on the ballot, you had your chance, you're done.
Her and her team are just so tone deaf, and I don't think that they have corrected anything. I don't think they've changed anything. I don't think she's actually owning it. I think if she did run again, it would just be on the, well, I think the whole focus will be, I'm better than Trump. You see him, he's an asshole. And she still won't focus on what and who she needs to focus on. So, again, Hillary Clinton, not viable. But
my question for you is, with the 2018 midterms coming up, how energized do you think the people who didn't come out for Hillary will be? And the reason I ask this is, Roy Moore lost in Alabama in large part because it was, because there was a huge black turnout.
Yeah,
huge
black turnout. Jim, it's hard to say. I think there is a good push. There is a good underground push from multiple groups. The NAACP, who I've ridiculed and criticized for the last 10 years about their lack of just relevance, has shifted gears. And they're really pushing people and educating people on the value of their vote. Obviously, they're leaning towards Democrat, but they're just like, you need to get up, get out and vote. Don't be intimidated. Don't let certain obstacles get in your way. Georgia, there's a lot of voter suppression issues coming out of that state. And the NAACP is working very hard to say, listen, you can't let them get in your way. Right, like as long as you're registered to vote, if there's not a bus taking you, then you need to get an Uber. If you don't know how to do Uber, we'll teach you how to Uber, right? But you need to show up to vote. You can't not vote just because it's not easy. Now the issues with voter suppression, that's a different issue. It's very important and it needs to be dealt with. But you know, whether you know, if from the black perspective, the one thing that we have to look at as a people is that racism is there. It's real. It exists. It exists in all forms. It exists systemically. It exists in day-to-day relationships. It exists everywhere, whether work, school, it's there, right? There are people out there who don't like you because of the color of your skin. That being said, you have to overcome it. You have to get around it. You have to deal with it. Right, you want to change it, then you got to fight it face to face, right? Like you get
showing up to vote is a great way to do that.
Showing up to vote is what is the sword and the shield. Voting for a lot of us in a lot of instances in a lot of these places, voting is your sword and your shield, and you have to use it. And if you don't, then your cries and your complaints about this and that fall on deaf ears. So you know,
literally from a systemic standpoint, right?
Like they do. Like,
why would we reach out to you if you're not going to vote for us?
If you're not going
to
vote for us,
that was a great line of William Bulworth, right? He's talking to the black church, and they said, you know, why did you do this? He goes, well, how much money did you give my campaign? I mean, you're not going to vote for the Republicans. I know that.
Right, and it's I mean, just not so it gets confused. This isn't about money, but this is about. You want to have an impact. You want to have a voice. This is your opportunity. And there are other things that need to be done and that can be done in the black community to help strengthen the community. But one of the things that they that we as a group have to do is we can't let some of the obstacles that are thrown in our way actually stop us, right? And we have to work around it. And that's why I said months ago that one of the biggest thing that the Democratic National Committee can do and that. Activist groups can do if you really want to influence the polls is not only encourage people to vote, not only register people to vote, but you got to get people out there and get them what they need to vote. You got to get them what they need to register. If a state is putting in an ID law, don't sit there and bitch and moan about the ID law. Like you got get a group of people who will fight the law, but then you go get a group of people out there getting people what they need so that they can go get an ID so they can vote. Right. If they need their social security number, their social security card, and they need a birth certificate, but they were born in Mississippi in 1947, then you got to fight tooth and nail to figure out how the hell you're going to get that person a birth certificate and a new social security card so that they can get their ID so they can go vote. If it's that important to you, then that's the level that you have to get down to so you can actually have the impact that you want to see. Those are the things that need to be done. Like sitting there and saying, oh, well, this law is not fair. It's not fair that you have an ID. Listen, the idea of having an ID to go vote isn't the end of the world, right? It's the end of the world because they know that if we tell people that they need an ID and they don't have it and it's kind of hard to get it, then they won't. So your argument that, well, it's hard to get it, so we shouldn't have to go get it, that's not a valid argument, right? Like, I mean, if you want to fight that fight, fine, but on the back end, you need to be saying, all right, I don't know if we're going to win this fight on this end. So the way to circumvent it is to just go get an ID and have it so then you can actually vote and then it doesn't matter. Because then what are they going to do?
We're at an hour 10. All right. Thank you again, Political Storm. Well, we should wrap it up out of respect for them.
Yes.
We should talk whiskey real quick. Just Old Forester, Bottled and Bond.
What do you think?
I'm giving it a solid 90. I really like it. Good flavor. Smooth. It's got some kick. I'm impressed.
And it's strong, too. 100 proof.
And you?
Love it. I'd had
score,
it before.
Score it?
94. Wow. No. Sorry. I was thinking about a year. 92.
92, okay.
It's a 92. I mean, for me, it's just so solid. It's so smooth. The flavor's good. We won't get into notes and all that other stuff.
Right,
but
right.
I love the Old Forester 1897 bottle and bond. 100 proof. It's a $35 to $40 bottle. Pick it up if you can find it. Have a drink. Have a sip. Put it on your shelf. It's a good look. This is Whiskey Congress. I'm Steve. You can find us on Facebook at Whiskey Congress. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, all social media at Whiskey Congress. Thank you for checking us out. Thank you for listening. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Political Storm, for giving us a live venue. Appreciate it. Right. And we are out.
Yes, sir.